This is an honor to be here back at Intel, my home away from home, and great to see you all and be with you. I'm really here for my own self-improvement along the themes of this whole organization. I always find that the best way to learn something is to teach it. And I find that this whole topic of decluttering one's life, of finding out how to essentialize things and really being able to introspect and find out the value that we have in and of ourselves, that which makes us actually happy, is always a worthy occupation. Not only that, it's an ongoing one. It's one in which we have to work at in order to declutter. Do any of you have any extra things that you don't need? Not that I want them or anything, but just asking. A few heads are nodding and laughing and so forth. Do any of you have any extra thoughts banging around in your mind that have been troubling you lately? Three people do? Four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten? Okay, good. Then good. Then maybe we can talk about a few things that will be helpful to you today. And really my object in presenting this today, as I said, first and foremost is for my own edification. And second is to exchange with you and hand off to you any tools that might be useful for you in making your lives more productive. And some of these things you might have heard before, but my duty isn't to always to make up new things, but it's to bring them back into focus. You're very progressive. You wouldn't be where you are now unless you were progressive and you've heard a lot of things. So really, I try to assemble them again in ways that you can look at them anew and maybe take them away and try them out again, because there's so many things to try. You have more than one app on your phone, a smartphone. Do you have a smartphone? Yes. More than one app. There's so many things that are vying for our attention. So we'll start off talking about, of course, I love this picture. Shraddha Devidasi, who does my PowerPoints for me, we go over them, had a number of options for the first slide, The Joy of Less. I was just thinking about how one flower can change somebody's life. If a child brings a flower to his or her mother on Mother or Father's Day, picked from the parent's own garden and offers with love, does that change the parent's life? Yes. You don't need something elaborate. You just need to do it with feeling. One word could change the course of somebody's life. One vote could change the course of an election and so forth. There's a lot of power in intentionality and just doing one simple thing. We don't have to do everything, but if we do the things that are available to us now that are meaningful, then we can really have an impact. There's so many things that we do have access to, we can kind of get lost in all of them and think, well, maybe it's all useless because there's so many things to do. So I really like this bringing back my attention to the fact that one simple act done with devotion, intentionality, will be very powerful for us. And then, was that you or me? Okay, that was me now. Here's a concept that's the outside world, the world we have around us, is a mirror, really, of our inside. We project outwardly what's inside us, and we tend to create our environment based on that. I have a very dear friend who's an international speaker and been a lifelong monk, and he was traveling through the airport in India, and the Secretary of the Environment saw him there and recognized him, and they started up a conversation. And she said, you know, what good can your meditation and mantras do to help the environment? How is that even practical, what you're doing? And he pointed out to her that the rivers are polluted. Why are they polluted? It's because somebody's mind is polluted, and therefore they don't mind throwing things in the river. You may clean up the river, but if the person's mind and heart doesn't get cleaned, then they're going to pollute the river again. So if there is a way in which one can purify one's own mind and declutter, then there's a way in which that manifests into the outer environment. It makes a big difference. And so looking at our environment, and also in very practical ways, many years ago I saw an interview with Sue Zorman. Have ever any of you heard of Sue's? She's a financial planner, expert, advisor, and so forth. And she was speaking about how she could judge the net worth of an individual by looking at inside the person's purse or closet and seeing how orderly it was. And it was uncanny, actually. She dealt with a few people, and she kind of guessed their net worth based on how organized their personal environment was. So we have the arrows going both ways. Our inside affects our outside affects our inside. And I like this slide because we see that the vibration that's going on, the narrative that's going on with my head, tends to get manifested outwardly, doesn't it? So talking about uncluttering, I'm going to talk about two major categories. One is inner and the other is outer. So the inner, I would say, is as practical as the outer. And let's look at a few points. Still on a foundational level, this is taking from tradition, just to give a little authenticity. The book's called the Yoga Sutras, which are thousands of years old, which are the tenets of yoga. And this is the second sutra of the Yoga Sutra. And it talks about how this yoga is the stilling of the changing states of the mind. In Sanskrit, changing states means vrittis. Vrit means to turn. The implication is my mind's always turning. It's looking in one direction or another. Have you ever had a circumstance where you accepted something and then a few minutes later or a year later or 10 years later, you rejected the same thing? You loved it and then you hated it? Possible? You've all done it? I'm good. I'm glad it's not just me. This is the nature of the changing mind. It's in Sanskrit, it's also called bhogatyag. I look at one thing to enjoy it, and then a little bit later, I reject the same thing. Tyag means to give something up. Bhog means to try to enjoy it. So if one, in the process of yoga, which is one of the first objectives, is to observe, how is it my mind's dealing with the world? Do I just take it for granted that I live in the world of my mind and I accept some things, reject them, even reject the same things I just accepted? This is one of the objectives of uncluttering the mind, is to find out how the mind's working and to see what things I'm accepting and what things I'm rejecting. And then the Yoga Sutra, the next one says, when that is accomplished, what is that? Means stilling the changing states of the mind. The seer abides in its own nature. So the implication here is that we have a valuable nature. Who we are is very valuable. Sometimes it's compared to a jewel that we have hanging around our neck that we've forgotten about. You ever leave money in your pocket and find it later? Don't you love that? You're having a bad day, you reach in your pocket, it's like, hey, there's $200. I forgot about that. It's been there for 2 years. Well, even on a larger scale, the yoga wisdom literatures say we're like that in a lot of ways because we're like a valuable gem, invaluable gem, let's say. And I've forgotten that it's even around my neck, so I'm looking everywhere else to try to find something, but then someone comes along and says, hey, what's that? You go, oh, right, I forgot. So in a similar way, when I'm absorbed in the outer world, when my life becomes too cluttered, I forget about who I am. I forget about how valuable I am. In fact, what we are is much more valuable than what we have. This is the point. And if we can see that by uncluttering our internal environment, then we'll be happy. And that's the point here. The seer abides in its own true nature, and the true nature of us is that we're happy for no reason. There's no reason that we're happy. We just are. That's our nature. You don't have to have anything to be happy. You don't have to be anywhere special to be happy. It's not dependent on the external environment. Does that ring true with all of you? That it's not, our circumstances don't determine whether we're happy or not. What our internal outlook is the determining factor of our happiness. Have you heard that before? This is a very common saying. It's not what happens to us that matters, it's what we do about what happens to us. You've heard that one, right? Yeah, so in a similar way, our true nature means that we're not dependent on the environment or on having particular things to make us happy. This is the basic tenet of this, of these Yoga Sutras. And when we still the mind, the changing states of the mind, which are accepting and then rejecting the same things, then we're able to actually introspect, and this is very, very valuable. And it's something anybody can do at any time. It's just that I don't take the time. And is it possible to go for a whole day without introspecting? Anyone? Who said yes? Okay. How about, is it possible for us to go 1 week without taking a moment to think about my existential nature and look within? Anyone? Possible? 1 week. How about, I'm raising the stakes here. How about a month? Is it possible to go to a month? Anyone? Yes? A year? She said yes. How about 10 years? Could you just whip through 10 years being absorbed in your life situation without thinking about your life? Possible? I got another yes. How about 100 years? Is it possible? We got one vote up here. So there's an old saying that an unexamined life is not worth living. So the whole point here is with uncluttering is take time to examine yourself, see who you are. Don't become so cluttered. Don't let your mind become so filled with accepting and rejecting that which is within the purview of your life situation so you forget about your life. Your life is different from your life situation. So advice from the Yoga Sutra, from tradition, thousands of years old, wisdom literatures. So focus is very powerful. You all know that because you wouldn't be where you are today if you hadn't focused at some point. I mean, if we are distracted, it's very difficult to get anything done. And I really like the analogy of the, what is this called? Magnifying glass, yeah, thanks. That there's diffuse light everywhere. But if you take a magnifying glass and you focus those diffuse rays of the sun in any one given place, you see here the fire is starting. And this is real. Actually, this you can do that. We used to do it as kids. When we got a little magnifying glass, we'd go out and try to light fires. Not great idea, especially nowadays. But this is one of the benefits of being able to unclutter my internal environment. It feels so good to focus. And on the other side, when I'm distracted by a million different stimuli that come from my environment, I tend to feel anxiety-ridden. Do any of you have any occasion during the day when you're doing your most important tasks to be distracted by other kinds of stimuli? Like what? What distracts you most? Like what are some of the little things that might come to your attention that pull you away from your task at hand?
People in other offices around me talking loudly.
Okay, people around you talking loudly. Whoever's doing that, please stop. Okay, anything else? Name a few more things. Which ways that you could become distracted in your daily life? Who said smartphones? Say more about it. Just be more specific. Cause
so you will receiving texts from families like, hey, have you done this? You know, make sure you make the payment, blah, blah, blah. And then there's emails, there's meetings, there's 100 plus items.
You know, I really appreciate you for bringing that up. Because you spoke from the heart, you know, and misery likes company. And I feel your pain because the same thing happens to me all the time. I'm sit down, I'm ready to do the thing I really want to do. And next thing I know, something urgent comes up and I have to deal with it. And there's so many ways for those things to get at us nowadays, right? They can come from any direction through our smartphones and through the telephone. Well, I don't very, very many mediums.
We have online audience saying thoughts, worries, social apps, notifications, internal dialogue.
Thoughts, worries,
Social apps.
Social apps.
Notifications.
Notifications.
Internal dialogue.
Internal dialogue.
Past and future.
Past and future. Very good comments. It covers both the inside and the outside. And I told you I'm going to go into to both categories. So, yeah, I mean, it can come from inside. It can come from outside. You can sit down, be ready to do your cherished task for the day and feel happy and focused so you're getting something done. And something will come up internally. We go, uh-oh, if I don't do this, I'm finished. I got to do it now. And then you get distracted. So these things are going on. So the power of focus, it's such a great asset. First of all, in the Ashtanga yoga system, it's an eightfold path of learning to control the mind. That the mission statement for that I gave at the very beginning was to be able to still the changing mind, to go beyond that. And there are stages at which one develops that, and one comes to the point of being able to focus the mind. And you know, there's a section in the Yoga Sutra that talks about controlling the mind so you can focus at one point for like 7 seconds. Does that seem like a long time? It's actually, in terms of focusing the mind, it's practically an eternity. It's a very high level of focus to be able to stay fixed on one point for 7 seconds. Nowadays, that may be very difficult to attain, but it is very valuable. And remembering that and striving for that can be very helpful. Our intensity of purpose is extremely valuable. Determines our success in life. In order to get any worthy thing done, we have to have some intensity of purpose. And this requires practicing focus. What is my major purpose? And not getting distracted by a million other things. In Sanskrit, in one of the ancient yoga wisdom literatures, it said, Vyavasayatmika Bhudhir Ekeha Kuru Nandana. So this means that if someone's able to focus their mind on their major purpose in life, Vyavasayatmika Bhudhir, and Bhudhir means the intelligence, they're able to train their intellect so they can focus in one place, then they can be successful and happy. But then it says, Bahu Shaka Hi Anantas. So Bahu means many, Shaka means branches. Hi Anantas means certainly unlimited. It's unlimited how much your mind can branch out into different directions and different purposes and take you away from your main ultimate purpose in life if you don't learn focus. So I'm just proposing, this is a theory I'm putting out there, but I just wrote it down as a sort of a simple equation. Your intensity of purpose equals your success. So you can test it out for yourself and think about this later. How much intensity do I have in my purpose right now? Is it splayed out? Am I being distracted and so forth? This can help. There's an ancient story. I'll set it up for you. This comes from I'm referring to these ancient yoga texts, wisdom literatures written thousands of years ago. There's a story about an enlightened person who was living in the wilderness alone. And one day the king with his retinue came through the wilderness and they met this sage and they had a conversation with him. So the king said to the sage, you're an enlightened person. He said, how did you become like this? And the sage said, well, I have my 24 teachers. And the king looked around and said, where? I don't see anybody. And the sage said, all around me, the mountain, the tree, the karari hawk, he named 24 different natural elements or scenes that he had seen in his daily life that taught him things. And one of the most valuable lessons that's pertinent to this particular presentation is that he saw the arrow maker. So one day, the arrow maker in the village was making arrows, obviously by hand, and you have to be very precise in carving the wood, making sure that it's not curved, and it's perfectly even all the way down. So he's sitting in his shop, he's carving the arrow, and that day, there was a huge parade that came through the town. There were jugglers, there were people swallowing flames, there were people singing, dancing, elephants. And the friend came to the arrow maker and said, did you see it? Did you see the parade? And the arrow maker said, what parade? I didn't see anything. Even though it had gone right past his shop. And observing this scene, this sage had learned the power of focus. the ability to have one pointed attention in one place. So you can remember in the story of the arrow maker, the lesson of focus. Stick with your craft. Keep all other kinds of distractions away from you while you're doing your work. Don't let them clutter your mind. Now here's another internal way in which I can clutter my mind very quickly. That's to lie. When I tell a lie, there are various nuances of lying, like embellishing, or unlike, you know, I actually did 10 units, but I say 11 instead. Why did I do that? Who knows? Or I can withhold part of the truth. That's another form of lying. In any way that one lies, and this is actually part of the yoga process, in Ashtanga Yoga, it's mentioned that before you're able to focus the mind and unclutter your internal environment, you actually have to become truthful. Because, everyone say together, now if I'm having auditions for a play here at Intel, unless you say it a little more enthusiastic, I'm not going to hire any of you. Try it again. Try to get into your bozo zone and extend your arms and be a little more enthusiastic. Are you ready? Go. Oh. That was really good. Now I'm going to have a hard time, you know, deciding who to hire. So this is true. As soon as I lie about something, and I always have a choice, you know, it comes before me. Can I say the truth, or should I embellish it, or should I tell a lie? As soon as I tell the lie, then my mind becomes cluttered. And I have a lot of excuses to make later, or a lot of things to think about. What if somebody discovers that I embellished, or I told an outright lie? What's going to happen now? You can't then sit down and focus your mind, because your mind will be cluttered with all kinds of worries about what will happen when I'm discovered. Also, in my mind, I might be thinking, like, why did I lie? It would have been easier to tell the truth. It causes reactions within the mind. So this is a very common discipline that's taught in the yoga world, is to be truthful. And it's a practice, because I notice it myself. In just moving about the world, there's always a choice to just tell the truth, tell it like it is. Don't try to make it something that it isn't. And see what happens. And it's very edifying, actually, to do that. And it helps to focus the mind and unclutter the heart. So, one of my favorites. We all have external input into our life. And my proposal is that we are what we hear. That is, these ears are like channels. And I'm going to tell you a little story. One day I was walking in my neighborhood, and I walked by several of these. I took this picture. It says, no dumping drains to bay. Have you ever seen these? Well, I've seen them too, but one day I particularly noticed them, because I was writing a piece, and I was thinking about how much what I take into my ears affects my consciousness. So then when I saw this, no dumping drains to bay, and I thought, you know, someone might, this is the grid right here, someone might dump some used oil or something and they think, like, it's gone. It just disappeared. This is a reminder. It didn't disappear. It ended up in the San Francisco Bay. And it accumulates there. So in the same way, in the context of what I was writing about, I was thinking, my ears are very much like these storm drains. Whatever I allow to go in here drains to the bay of my heart. And it stays there. When I say heart, it means my consciousness, the way I look at the world, the way I'm affected by various thoughts. And so then I thought I should, if I ever decided to get tattoos, and I'm not going to do this, I'm just saying, I put up here, no dumping drains to bay, just above these little storm drains. Because whatever I allow to go in here is definitely going to go into my heart and mind, and it's going to stay there. So back to this slide. If you don't like what you're being subjected to in this world, anybody in that case? You don't like what you're being subjected to? One person in the back. Thank you. You don't like what you're being subjected to? Then change the subject. This is one of the arts of uncluttering the mind. is you get to decide what you allow to go in. You hold the buttons in your hand. You can decide to change the conversation to go in a different way. It's, for instance, somebody's gossiping and talking behind somebody's back. One of your, you know, group of colleagues talking about another colleague, not in a progressive way, not in a helpful way, but in a pernicious way, some criticism or something like that. If you take it in, you become implicated. It's your choice. You can participate or you can walk away or you can change the subject. And in all our different environments, to be aware of the fact that we have the choice to change the vibration that's coming into our mental system is one of the main tenets of uncluttering our internal environment. Because whatever you hear, you will become, just as much as you are what you eat. Have you ever heard that? So this is a big topic. Because you are what you eat, not just in body, which is obvious, but also in mind and in spirit. You sort of develop according to what you take in. So we have choices. And especially sound in the philosophy of yoga is very important. So what you listen to, you become. So don't dump. Now, before I move on to the next slide, which is one of my favorites, and you've seen before, but it's one of those ones I want to remind you of, how beautiful and practical it is. It's from Stephen Covey. I just want to get a few reflections just to bring the room alive. And a reflection isn't a question. Question has a question mark at the end and I have to answer it. That will do later if you have questions. But right now, my humble request is if you could reflect back anything that you've heard so far that's stuck in your mind. Still the changing mind. Thank you very much. Yeah, give him the mic. Let him say it in his own voice for everyone online.
Thank you. Still the changing mind.
Why did that stick with you? Can you say?
Because my mind is constantly thinking. I'm constantly having conversations with myself. And I'm constantly focusing on multiple things. So that one very much applies to me.
Thank you very much. Bringing a metaphor from some of the wisdom literatures that I'm referring to, there's a statement in one of the ancient yoga texts that when a person becomes masterful at meditation yoga, the mind becomes like the ocean. And millions of rivers are flowing into the ocean at any given time, but the ocean doesn't change its level. And so in a similar way, millions of thoughts are coming into my mental system, but a person who learns the power of focus doesn't become disturbed by them. Thank you for reflecting back. Let's take a few more. Reflections are fun because all you have to do is put one fragment out that you heard so far. It amplifies it. Okay, we've got one, two, three.
So we have three reflections online. First one is, your life situation is not your life.
Yes.
Second one is, you become what you let in.
Yes.
Third one is, whatever you hear is what you will become.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. Very nice. Okay. She's the second.
It's similar to what she said. What comes in through the ears goes to the heart and mind.
Yes.
That one's really important to me.
Yes, and it's written poetically that the heart is like the driver. The body is compared to a chariot. We go in various directions in our life. Like, why'd you go that way? My heart made me do it. Did you ever hear that? You know, I thought I should do it this way, but my heart said do the other way. So it's said in poetical literature that the heart is actually the driver of the chariot of the body. And so our heart gets affected in various ways, especially by what we take in, what we listen to. And if we concentrate on making the heart a repository of very positive, uplifting information and sounds, then we'll go in that direction as well. Thank you very much. That was great. Yes.
I'm going to be a little provocative.
Provocative, yes.
Because it's fun to be provocative. So one, it sounds a very solitary endeavor to still the mind. And as you engage with the world, I think it's going to be more and more difficult because that's the nature of the beast. When you engage, it's changing, right? And secondly, what are your comments on actually living in the world? I mean, thinking by itself is some kind of a change of your mind, right? And thinking is essential to to interact with the world in some sense. Right? Whenever you want to achieve something, whenever you want to set a goal, thinking is the first thing that comes in, right?
Yeah.
So is there some contradiction or difficulty in pursuing stillness of mind and living in the world?
Yeah, thank you. That's such an important question because it's very practical. There are ways in which I might conclude that because the world's a complicated place, that the real solution is to withdraw from it completely. Not interact, don't touch things, don't think about things, and so forth. And actually, some people propound such philosophies. But the school of yoga that I come from, called bhakti really is called the yoga of gratitude. And it's learning to change the way you look at the world, and also your intention for interacting with people and things in the world. And in that way, says the philosophy of bhakti, you transform the world. And I'll give you an example. Many material items, material articles are transformable. For instance, an iron rod. If you put an iron rod in fire and you leave it there long enough, what happens? Any blacksmiths in here? You have a blacksmith department here at Intel? Not anymore, right? What happens if you leave it long enough? It becomes red hot. And I've seen this. I was recently in Japan and I was in an ancient city called Takayama. At least it's been there many thousands of years, but they have preserved much of the many of the handicrafts, and one of them blacksmithing. And I was watching a blacksmith put an iron rod in fire. I came back an hour later, it was red hot. And I saw that iron rod was no longer iron, it was fire. So, and similarly, when anything that I use, whether they're thoughts, whether they're material things, when I engage them for a higher purpose, and one of my mission statements is do selfless service. In other words, do service for others, and it transforms the things that you're using. The intentionality behind it transforms them. So that way, one can interact with the world. You could use all kinds of things and thoughts and interactions with people, but if your intention is for service, then you'll find a couple things happen. One thing is that you're welcome wherever you go. The other one is that you transform the relationship, because when you align things with service, you're thinking really how to selflessly serve, how to help somebody else, how to help the situation without any personal motive, then you're not troubled by the same thoughts that might be troubling before. They're no longer a burden to you. They're transformed, just like the iron is turned into fire. Thank you for that. Okay, now I'm going to look at my watch to see how the time's going, because I don't see a clock in here. And I'm getting a little nervous because I tend to get absorbed in what I'm saying and go long. And I know you're all busy people and you have places to go. May I look at my watch? Okay, it is. Time's moving on. Okay, go ahead.
Be true, then you can still your mind, then you can focus, then you can succeed.
Oh, nice. Yes, and this is important to remember, to be lined up. If I'm unfocused, I can become actually dysfunctional, and I can become unproductive very quickly and morose because of that. I'll be lost in an ocean of things and thoughts. Thank you. Now I'm going to move on to one of my favorite charts in the whole world. Are you ready? Okay, when I open it, you say, ta-da. One, two, three. Come on, people, let's go. Think about auditioning for the next play here at Intel. Are you ready? One, two, three. Thank you very much. We need a little work, but we're getting there. Okay, you've seen this before, but please revisit it. This is from The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People by Stephen Covey. I love this chart. And actually, to be honest with you, I've only ever really entertained the inner circle and the outer circle. Now there's a third one within it that I just recently discovered on the internet. But for many years, I've thought of this chart. And whenever I look at it, it helps me to unclutter my internal environment. Now, how is that? Let me propose to you for a minute that we have a lot of thoughts. True or false? Okay. So those thoughts come within these realms. One is thoughts that I can actually do something about. What do I have influence over in this world? And the second is my circle of concern. Do you have any concerns? Let me put it this way. Do you have any concerns about things you can't do anything about? What's one of them? Yeah. The environment, yes. Of course, there's some little things we can do about it, but in a general way, it seems a little daunting. It's a little over our heads, and therefore, you know, we try to dig in on a personal level, do what we can, but it can be a little overwhelming. There may be other things that are going on in the world, macro things. What else do you have concern about that seem a little beyond our reach right now? Name one other thing. The stock market, right? You know, you can't run in there and go like, stop. All you can do is try to come up with a good investing philosophy and stick to it over a long period of time. And then what happens after that is really beyond your control, right? So we have a circle of influence and we have a circle of concern. It's very helpful when it comes to uncluttering your mind. Because when you start running into this area, there should be a warning light that goes off that says you're torturing yourself for no good reason. Because there's nothing you can do about it right now. So go back here into your circle of influence. And if you really want to be disciplined and happy, anybody? Three people. Okay, five, ten. Then go here. Within your circle of influence, there's a circle of commitment. Now within that circle of influence, you say, like, what am I actually committed to? What am I actually going to do something about? And when you learn to get in that circle, stay out of here, get into here, and then really stuff yourself into here and see how can I focus my energy. Remember, we talk about focus here. Then you find out, oh, I feel useful in the world. I'm fortified. I feel edified. I'm actually moving in the direction that I want to move in because I'm doing something that will have an influence on my life and the lives of others. Does that make sense? Do you like the graph? Say yes. Thank you. Okay, so again, another little graphic to remind us where we are on the map. You are here. Our inside and our outside are constantly being complemented or diminished because of our exposure. We talked a little bit just now about our internal life. We have an internal life, and it's affected by our external environment. And however we are configured internally, will mirror into our external environment and will create things according to that. If our internal environment is a mess, what do you think our external environment will look like? Two words. Thank you. A mess, correct. So, you know, what do we have inside? That's important. Now, here's another concept coming from the yoga world, yoga wisdom and philosophy. So just interesting breakdown in the Sanskrit word, language, which is a very precise language. In fact, the word Sanskrit means refined. It's very refined, advanced language, almost mathematical. So this word, atyahara, everyone please say. So it's two words put together. So ati, say, means extreme. And ahara means eating or collecting. So have you ever seen extreme sports? Well, now you've heard of extreme eating or extreme collecting. And so this is actually one of the disciplines in the yoga system is to avoid extreme eating or extreme collecting. There's a saying, eat to live, don't live to eat. And don't over collect because here's why. It's visual noise. Now, turn the light off for just for a second. I want a little more impact on this. There you go. Okay, you can turn it back on. That's all we can handle. I once talked to a personal organizer, a pro. They think all the time how to organize everything. So she was telling me how when you have extra things in your environment, what's an extra thing, would you say? You don't need it. Like, why would you have it if you don't need it, right? Because you don't have a place for it. You haven't accounted for it yet. So it's extra. It tends to pile up in your environment. What it amounts to, she said, is visual noise. Actually, the word noise is cognate with the word nausea, which means seasickness. It actually makes us sick and disoriented, out of balance when you think of nausea, right? It's not like a term that you're... you know, you get cheerful when you hear about nausea. So in the same way, this visual noise comes when we have extra things in our environment. Now I'm talking about the external world. And there are ways in which we can become aware of this and try to winnow out those things that are extra in our lives. And in my own experience, and you know, to prepare for this presentation today, I took it upon myself. I just came back from overseas, had about a week, and I took the last 5 days to get rid of a lot of stuff. I don't know where it comes from. It just comes and it piles up. And you know, I took things out, I put them in different piles, I gave some away, I threw some away, I recycled other kinds of things. And when you give away things, when you get rid of things from your environment, what's something that you notice? Have any of you done that before? What do you notice? You feel lighter. Yes, you feel lighter. What else? What is it? Same thing, yeah. You know one thing I noticed? I'm still alive. Because those things were looking at me going like, I don't know if you can survive without me. And I'm like, I don't know either. Let me see. And I give them away. I get rid of them. And they're like, hey, I'm still alive. I can survive independent of things. That's a nice revelation to have. It brings us back into that space of introspection to understand that I'm a whole being. I don't need lots of things. I just need a few things. In other words, eat to live. Don't live to eat. So visual noise. Story from ancient wisdom. These isn't from a text, but it's traditional stories that have been passed on through many generations of yoga teachers in order to make a point. Story time? Yes? You hate stories? Okay. So, there was a monk. And monks, when they're living in that discipline, live a very simple life. They don't have many things. I lived in a monastery for 13 years. And it was a very happy time in my life. I just had a space on a mat on the floor to sleep on, and I didn't have any things. I had no bank account. I had no personal things, just what I needed to live, and I was happy all the time. I can say that for sure. And so monks live like that. And so one day, this monk was living a very happy life by the bank of a river. And every day, he would go in and take his bath in the river, he'd take his cloth, wash it, hang it on the tree, and then take his bath. And now, one day he's in, and he comes out, and he finds a little hole in his cloth. He's like, what's going on? So then, he goes in the bath the next day, washes his cloth, hangs it on the tree, and he looks up from the river, and he sees there's a mouse. And the mouse is chewing a hole in his cloth. So he's like, I'm not going to have much cloth left if this keeps going on. So he thinks, what's to do now? So there happens to be some people down the river, and he tells them his problems the next day, and they say, tell you what you need is a cat. You get yourself a cat, and the cat will keep the mouse away, and it'll be fine after that. So he goes, okay, where do I get a cat? They tell him, you go in the village, you know, find a cat, bring it back. So he brings the cat back, the mouse goes away, but then he's taking his bath, and he hears the cat. Meow, meow. What's wrong? He goes to the people, and they, oh, you got to feed it. He's like, what do you feed it? Milk. He's like, where do I get milk? Get a cow. So he brings the cow back. And every day now he's milking the cow, take care of the cow, bringing all kinds of clover and things for the cow to eat, taking care of the cow, protecting it. He says, that's a lot of work. I don't know if I can take all this. So he goes back to the people in the village and he says, what's going on? You know, this is getting a little more complicated. They said, we have the solution. You need a wife. You get married, she'll help you. So he gets a wife. Wife comes back. He says, hey, I don't want to live out of here. We need a house. So he gets a house, and he's got a house and a cow and a cat, and he's keeping the mouse away. But then his teacher comes back. He's been away on a pilgrimage. He comes back after a year, and he's giving class nearby. So the monk, he tells the teacher, look, I'd love to come to your classes, but I'm too busy. I can't come. I've been entangled. I've been captured by all of these duties that I have to do. So the next day, the teacher comes right near his house. He grabs onto a tree like this. Light out for 1 second to get more impact. There he is. There's the teacher. Okay, you can put it on. So then the teacher, he grabs onto the tree and starts yelling out, help, help, help. And the ex-monk comes running out of his house. And he goes, teacher, teacher, what's wrong? And he says, this tree's got me. Tell him to let go. And he said, teacher, you've got the tree. It doesn't have you. And he's looks over and he goes, exactly. So in a way, years ago I was reading about entrepreneurial pursuits and jobs and so forth, and there were some charts that showed in order to make it to my workplace, I'll have to have a wardrobe. That's very costly these days. And in order to get to work, I have to have transportation. That could be really costly with depreciation on your automobile and paying for gas and so forth. And by the time I actually get all the things so that I can do my work, that I realize that, oh, I'm breaking even practically to pay for all these things just so I can do it. So there's a way in which I have to realize which things am I holding on to and why, and sorting them out in my life. So here's a mantra that I find very useful. A friend of mine uses this all the time, one of the most organized people I've ever met. And this is a good mantra. Do you want to try it together? You ready? Go. Yeah, this is very useful because when you look around and you see all the things that you might have, find out where their place is. Have a place for everything and then put everything in its place. And when you do that, then when anything else shows up that shouldn't be there, and you said, you know, things you don't need, those are the extra things, right? If you don't need it, then you don't need it. So get rid of it. So if you don't have a place for everything and everything in its place, when something extra shows up, you won't know because it'll just hang out and it becomes what? Visual noise. It starts to hang out in your environment, and it really does trouble us. It really does distract us from our main purpose in life and our focus in life. So practice this. See if you can find a place for everything in this place. And if it doesn't have a place and you can't make a place for it, then get rid of it and see how you feel. You'll notice, first of all, that you're still alive. So here are a few tips for helping the external environment, just very practical things. First is to prioritize, general category. Keep only what you really need. Does that make sense? Okay, next one is get rid of things you don't need. Does that make sense? Next thing is learn to say no. That helps in a lot of circumstances because I may feel pressure, do this, do that. But if you're very clear about what your purpose is and the direction you're going, when people ask you to do extra things, you can just say no. And after you say no, which may seem like a very difficult thing to do, what's one of the first things you might notice? You're still alive. You live through it. And everyone still likes you, okay. It's not a big deal. So learn to turn things down that tend to take away. They rob your time. And lastly, I have this little app called Habit List. It's really helped me over the years. I don't work for them, and I don't get anything from them. It's just recommending. But there are many apps like this. But Habit List, you can list the kind of habits that you want to stick to every day. And then every day, I just go in and I click it when I finish that habit for the day. And I feel happy because then you can get a trend going. Some of them I have 365 days already that I've done that same habit. And how do I feel about my life? Happy. And when other habits try to sneak in, I say, sorry, you're not on the list. I'd like to really help you out, but, you know, you didn't make it. So I have my priorities straight. So we keep, and that's a very practical way using technology that you can stay fixed and focused. I'm going to look at my watch again, okay? May I? Permission? So when people look at their watch, it means something. It's breaking the bond. So now I'll take a few more reflections. And right after that, guess what? There's questions, which can be really treacherous. So let's take the easy route first. Reflections. What are some things that you heard that stuck in your mind, that you're taking out of here in your pocket? When you walk out the door, somebody grabs you by the arm and says, what was that guy talking about in there? This is the one thing that you'll say. Reflect. Yes. Now, this gentleman in the back.
Think about what you're committed to.
Yes, that's so powerful. It's so simple but powerful. Every year I take time, at the end of the year, my wife and I take a retreat, 5 days, and we write down how did the year go, and also what's the main purpose. It's so edifying and helps to focus in such a powerful way. Decide what you want to do, in which direction you want to go, because you can go an hour, you can go a day, a week, a month, 10 years, you can go a whole lifetime without deciding for yourself what you really want. And it doesn't mean now that you've become so accomplished in your careers and everything like that, that you can't revisit and decide what you want to do. Thank you for bringing that up. What else? Yes.
Well, we have some online comments that
relate to visual noise, unwanted things.
Yes.
Learn to say no.
Yes.
And one other person mentioned, I'm going to start decluttering things right when I get home.
Yay! Okay. Thank you very much. Me too. And often in decluttering, I find that it's helpful to start with one thing, because it seems overwhelming how many things we might have and how to dig out. So one of the techniques is really start with one thing, because it actually feels so good that when you get one thing. The other day I cleaned out a closet. It's been bothering me for a long time. I haven't had time because I've been traveling so much. That's my excuse. But when I went in there, I said, I'll just take one thing out. My wife came home, the whole place was, you know, I had taken everything out of the closet. It was, all the items were out. And, you know, I ended up spending 2-3 hours happily. So getting rid of things and taking care of that. So start simple and then expand from there. Two more. Reflect back. Anything you heard that you've taken with you? Yes.
Learn to say no.
Yeah. It's so hard for me. I don't know if it's hard for you.
It is very hard for me.
It's hard. It is hard. And I just did it recently. You know, sometimes these decisions are practically impossible. You know, it was a social event that was very important to me, but I just come back from overseas. I had pressing matters I had to deal with at home. And, you know, I just couldn't do it physically. So I ended up making some alternatives. It was a wedding, and I ended up sending, a verbal message recorded that they played there, that, you know, my appreciation for the wedding and the celebration, everything. It turned out fine, but it was really hard to say no. But after I did say no, then I felt liberated. And these are very hard things to do, but feel empowered to do that, to say no when you need to.
Yes, say no to people and say no to things. That's
yes,
hard.
Say no to people, say no to things. Decide what you want to do, and if it's not on your list, then feel free to say no. Okay, so we have one more from the internet.
Understand that we cannot give place to anything and everything.
Yes.
And on the similar lines, find a place for everything. If there's no place, then let go.
That's right. There's an old saying, Stephen Wright, the comedian, used to say, anybody know Stephen Wright? He'd say, you can't have everything, where would you put it? Then he said, you don't know what you got till it's gone, so I got rid of everything to see what I had. he was a genius. So now a couple questions. Questions are harder, they have a hook on the end, and I have to answer them. Yes, bring the challenges now.
I have a question concerning intensity of purpose that equals your success.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of Simon Sinek?
Yes.
So he wrote the book Start With Why.
That's right.
And the why is essentially your purpose.
Yes.
The way he's explained it and the way others have explained it, once you identify your why being it, it's yours, by nature it will have its strength. It will be intensified already. So we're wondering, how did that fit into your equation? Can someone identify a purpose that's not really theirs? And if so, can you really intensify that? And can that be a confusing thing for people just to even find that purpose?
You know, my experience in life is that when something's very personal, when it really is meaningful to me, and I'm feeling the intensity of wanting to achieve it, then heaven and earth will move to help me towards my purpose. When it's artificial, when I'm doing it for someone else, when my heart's really not into it, it's uncanny how how difficult it is to move it forward. And I may go through the motions, but there's some quality that is so powerful when we have made up our own mind to do something. I mean, nothing is so powerful as using our free will to decide what we actually want to do. And you can see many examples of this in your own life and the lives of other people who have achieved things. Ultimately, they made a decision, I'm doing this. I don't care what anybody else says, this is what I'm going to do. And when you have that internal conviction, then there's a kind of power that moves the world around you. And not only that, you start to see obstacles as things that you can deal with. There's always ways around them. In fact, they can be helpful because they make you stronger and so forth. So yes, it really has to be yours, ultimately, for it to be super powerful.
a question on tell the truth.
Yes.
So I have the fear, like, you tell the truth, it may hurt somebody's feeling, or you have this, I have this fear that it might, I don't want to deal with the fallout or whatever comes after I told the truth. So
these are deep questions. Actually, you know, you go back to Aristotle, Plato, and there's discussions of this about the ethics of truth. You know, if you tell the truth and it gets somebody killed, is it actually the truth or is it important? And, you know, ultimate conclusion there was that in such cases, you really have to not tell the truth. So not to give exceptions, but the fact is that there are exceptions. And so you have to be a little artful and see how to present it in such a way that it may not harm others. So the yoga literatures say in the same category, this is called what it's called the austerity of speech. Learning to speak in such a way that's truthful, beneficial, and it avoids offending other people. So that's an art, how to present the truth in such a way. And as a, you know, if somebody's a coach or a manager of a department or something, like you, many of you probably are here, you know that there's repercussions if you're too abrupt with people. You don't consider how you tell the truth. So when you tell it, there's a way to do it in such a way that people get it for themselves and they don't feel overly burdened by it. And, you know, many of these things you can do by finding out what the person's temperament is. Like Peter Burwash, good friend of mine who runs Peter Burwash International, is a huge international tennis teaching organization. And he once told me that in his organization, he trains all his managers. And so that when new employees come in, they ask them, how do you like to receive your correction? How do you like to be told the truth? Directly, indirectly, and so forth. So this goes towards the nuance of being sensitive when you do present. But it's more for our own purification and direction that we're careful not to become lazy and then just say, well, I'll carve parts of it off. I won't tell the truth because it's convenient for me. It's slightly different when you're considering how it will sit with other people, and that can be done. But when you do it for your own benefit, that you shade the truth, you tell a lie and so forth, that's when it really affects you.
So what you're saying is your own agenda or your own benefit is not in the consideration of when and how to tell the truth. However, if you keep service in mind, how you benefit others, how you help the situation, that determines when and how you tell the truth.
I liked the way you put things. That was really helpful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Very nice. So I believe we've come to the end. And I so deeply appreciate the time, the fact that you took your time, which is very valuable. And you came here and gave such rapt attention. And it's been a lot of fun for me being with you here at Intel. And I'm going to stick around for a few minutes, maybe 15 or 17. And I'm going to sit up here with a few chairs. And if anybody wants to stay afterwards and ask me any question for any reason, like who the heck are you, or you know, what do you do, or a question about this thing, I'll just be here to chat. So if you have extra time and you want to hang out, this is what we'll do. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So the event's from 12 to 1. So if you have to go, that's great. If you would like to talk and have a more intimate dialogue, what we're going to do is set up some circles back there, and people can stay and we can continue. For folks on the bridge, if you had more questions, I'm sorry we ran out of time. But if you would like, somebody can follow up with you. Okay. So thank you on the bridge. We'll close the bridge down now.